He checked his image in the full-length mirror that hung on the wall opposite his bed. He smoothed the thick, coarse, dark hair. Of course it was dyed. But that was one of his few remaining conceits. Then he crossed the uncarpeted wooden floor of his own quarters and opened the door into the long conference room which would be his headquarters over the days to come. The persons seated there rose to their feet immediately, their attitudes servile and their expressions obsequious. Von Schiller strode to the head of the long table and stepped up to the block of wood covered with carpeting that his private secretary had placed there for him. This block went everywhere with him. It was 9 inches high. From this elevation, von Schiller looked down upon the men and one woman who waited for him. He looked them over unhurriedly, letting them stand a while. From the vantage point of his block, he was taller than any of them. First, he looked at Helm. The Texan had worked for him for over a decade. Completely reliable, he was strong both physically and mentally, and would follow orders without question or qualms. Von Schiller had come to rely on him. He could send him anywhere in the world, from Zaire to Queensland, from the Arctic Circle to the steaming equatorial forests, and Helm would get the job done with the minimum of fuss and with very few unpleasant consequences. He was ruthless but discreet, and like a good hunting dog, he knew his master. From Helm he looked at the woman. Jutta Kemper was his private secretary. She ordered and directed the details of his life, from his food to his block, from his medicine to his social calendar. No man or woman was ever received into his presence without her prior arrangement. She was also his communications expert. A mass of electronic equipment that occupied one wall of the hut was her preserve. Jutta was able to find her way through the ether with the infallible instinct of a homing pigeon, from the archaic art of the keyboard and Morse code to burst transmissions and random switching. He had never known another person, male or female, who could match her wizardry. She was of that perfect age for a woman, 40, slim and blonde, with slanting green eyes over high cheekbones, resembling the young Dietrich. Von Schiller's own wife, Ingmar, had been an invalid for the last 20 years, and Jutta Kemper had stepped into the void she had left in his life. Yet she was more than either secretary or wife to him. When he had first met Jutta, she had been holding a very senior position in the technical section of the German National Telecommunications Network, and moonlighting as a pornographic actress. Not for the money, but for the love of the job. Copies of the videos she had made at that time were amongst von Schiller's most precious possessions, after his collection of Egyptian antiquities. Like Helm, she had no qualms. There was nothing she would not do to him, or allow him to do to her, to fulfil his most bizarre fantasies. When he watched her videos and she did some of these things to him, she was the only woman who could still bring him to orgasm. Yet even this happened less frequently with every month that passed, and each time the spasms of sexual release she could evoke from his ageing body were less intense. Jutta had her recording equipment set up before her on the table. It was part of her multifarious duties to keep accurate and complete records of every meeting and conversation. Then von Schiller looked past these two trusted employees to the two other men standing at the table. Colonel Nogo he had met for the first time that morning as he stepped down from the Jet Ranger helicopter that had flown them down from Addis Ababa to the base camp here on the summit of the escarpment of the Nile Gorge. He knew very little about him, except that Helm had selected him and was so far satisfied with his performance. Von Schiller himself was not equally impressed. There had already been some bungling. Nogo had allowed Quentin Harper and the Egyptian woman to slip through his clutches. After a lifetime of operating in Africa, von Schiller placed little trust or store in blacks and preferred to work with Europeans. However, he realized that for the time being, Nogo's services were indispensable. He was, after all, the military commander of the southern Goyam. No doubt, once he had served his purpose, he could be taken care of. Helm would see to that. He would not have to bother himself with the details. Von Schiller looked now at the last man at the table. Here was another who was indispensable for the time being. Nahut Gudabi was the one who had brought the existence of the seventh scroll to his attention. Apparently some English author had written a fictionalized version of the scrolls, but von Schiller never read fiction of any sort, either in German or in any other of the four foreign languages in which he was fluent. Without Nahut bringing the existence of the Taita scrolls to his notice, he might have overlooked this opportunity of his lifetime. The Egyptian had come to him as soon as the original translation of the scrolls had been completed by Duraiyad al-Simma, and the existence of an unrecorded pharaoh and his tomb had been mooted. Since then, they had been in constant contact, and when the time came that al-Simma and his wife had started to make too much headway with their investigations, von Schiller had employed Nahut to get rid of them and to bring the seventh scroll to him. The scroll was now the shining star of his collection, safely housed with his other ancient treasures in the steel and concrete vaults below the Schloss in the mountains that was his private retreat, his eagle's nest. Despite this, the choice of Nahut to undertake the more sensitive work of ridding him of al-Simma and his wife had proved to be a mistake. He should have sent a professional to take care of them, but Nahut had argued that he was capable of seeing it through, and he had been well paid for the work that he had mismanaged so ineptly. He, too, would be disposable in time, but right now von Schiller still needed him. There was no question that Nahut's understanding of Egyptology and hieroglyphics was far in advance of von Schiller's own. After all, Nahut had spent most of his life studying them, while von Schiller was an amateur and only a comparatively recent enthusiast. Nahut was able to read the scrolls and this new material that they had acquired as though they were letters from a friend, whereas von Schiller was obliged to puzzle over each symbol and resort frequently to his reference books. Even then, he was not capable of picking up the finer nuances of meaning in the text. Without Nahut's assistance, he could not hope to solve the riddles which confronted him in the search for Mahmoud's tomb. This was the team who were now assembled beneath him, waiting for him to start the proceedings. "Sit down, please, Fräulein Kemper," he said at last. "You too, gentlemen. Let us get started." Von Schiller remained standing on his block at the head of the table. He enjoyed the feeling of superior height. His short stature had been a source of humiliation ever since his school days, when he had been nicknamed Pippa by his peers. "Fräulein Kemper will be recording everything which is said here this afternoon. She will also issue each of you with a folder of documents, which she will collect from you again at the end of this meeting. I want to make it very clear that none of this material will ever leave this room. It is of the most confidential nature and belongs to me alone. I will take a most stringent view of any breach of this instruction." As Jutta handed out the folders, von Schiller looked at each recipient in turn. His expression made it clear what the penalty would be for any contravention of his instructions. Then von Schiller opened the dossier that lay on the tabletop in front of him. He stood over it, leaning forward on his bunched fists. "In your folders you will find copies of the Polaroid photographs that were recovered from Quentin Harper's camp. Please look at these now." Each of them opened their own folder. "Since our arrival, Dr. Nahut has had an opportunity to study these, and he is of the opinion that they are genuine, and that the stele in the photographs is an authentic artifact of ancient Egyptian origin, almost certainly dating from the second intermediate period, circa 1790 BC. Is there anything you wish to add to this, Doctor?"
Thank you, Herr von Schiller," Nahut smiled oleaginously, but his dark eyes were nervous. There was something cold and dispassionate about the old German that terrified him. He had displayed no emotion whatsoever as he ordered Nahut to arrange the death of Duraiyad al-Simma and his wife. Nahut knew that he would be equally unmoved if he were to order Nahut's own murder. He realized that he was riding the tiger's back. "I would just like to qualify that statement. I said that the stele pictured in these prints appeared to be genuine. Of course, I would not be able to give you a definite opinion until I was able to examine the actual stone at first hand." "I note your qualification," von Schiller nodded. "And we are assembled here to find the means to obtain the stele for your examination and verdict." He picked up the glossy print that Jutta had made from the original that morning in the laboratory darkroom in the adjoining hut. Photography was not the least of her many talents and skills, and she had done a very competent job. The copies of the Polaroids that Helm had transmitted to him in Hamburg had been blurred and distorted, but still they had been sufficient to bring him rushing across the continents in all this haste. Now he held these clear likenesses in full colour, and his excitement threatened to suffocate him. While they were all silent, he caressed the print as lovingly as if it had been the actual object that it portrayed. If this were genuine, as he knew instinctively that it was, then it alone would be well worth the considerable cost in time and money, and human life, that he had already paid. It was a marvellous treasure, to match even the original seventh scroll which was already in his collection. The condition and state of preservation of the stele after 4,000 years seemed to be extraordinary. He lusted for it, as he had for few things in his long life. It required an effort to set aside this pervasive longing, and to apply his mind to the task ahead of him. "If, however, the stele is genuine, Doctor, can you tell us, or rather, can you suggest to us where it may be situated and where we should direct our search?" "I believe that we should not consider the stele in isolation, Herr von Schiller. We should look at the other Polaroids that Colonel Nogo was able to recover for us, and which Fraulein Kemper has so ingeniously copied." Nahut set aside the one print and selected another from the pile in the folder in front of him. "This one, for example." The others riffled through their own files and selected the same print as he was displaying. "If you study the background of this copy, you will see that in the shadows behind the stele, there appears to be the wall of some type of cave or cavern." He looked up at von Schiller, who nodded encouragement. "There also appears to be some type of barred doorway." Nahut set the print aside and selected another. "Now, see here. This is a photograph taken of another subject. It is, I believe, of a mural decoration painted upon either a plastered wall or the bare rock of a cave, possibly an excavated tomb. It seems to have been taken through the grill of the gate, which I pointed out to you in the first photograph of the stele. This mural is almost certainly Egyptian in style and influence. In fact, it very strongly reminds me of those murals that decorated the tomb of Queen Lostris in Upper Egypt, in which the original Taita scrolls were uncovered."
"Ja, ja, go on," von Schiller encouraged him.
"Very well, then. Using the barred gate as the connecting factor, there is every reason to believe that both stele and murals are located in the same cave or tomb. If that is so, what indications do we have as to where Quentin Harper photographed these Polaroids?" Von Schiller was still frowning angrily as he looked at each of them in turn. They all tried to avoid his blue, penetrating scrutiny. "Colonel Nogo," von Schiller singled him out, "this is your country. You know the terrain intimately. Let us hear your thoughts on the subject." Colonel Nogo shook his head.
This man, this Egyptian, he used the epithet disparagingly, is mistaken. There is not an Egyptian tomb in the photographs.